So there's the competition with the larger, department stores.
Yeah, well, they were cutting prices to keep afloat, you know. And
a lot of your furniture factories and the like, somewhat.
Yeah, there was Tynan's.
They were folding up.
Called Tynan's. It had no relation to the. I believe there's still a Tynan's right now, but this, I think, was a different firm. Anyway, they went broke. And very fine interior decorator on South Gunnell Street also closed doors. So the firms back east clamped COD on everybody in town, in the small businesses. It wouldn't apply to the department stores, of course. But it made it very tough for people like ourselves, whose business was not COD. We sold, except for the odd vase or ashtray or what have you, we never got cash for anything over the counter. It was always the charge account, you know. And some of these were a bit shaky. We lost one account. It was partly, not entirely, the depression. The chap was a crook. He hightailed it to Seattle, owing a furniture shop on South Granville, which isn't there anymore, hasn't been there for years, and ourselves. I think we provided draperies for this house on Devonshire Crescent until he owed us $600, which we never did collect. And then one of the department stores put us down near on the rocks, another point with I don't need to go into that, because that was before the depression started. That was while we were working in the house here.
Did so for the staff and the like, you were at the shorter work week and that, so you didn't have to lay them off. How are you making their salaries for the staff, your staff? Because you're having trouble even buying stock.
Well, every cent that came in went out again. That's why we often didn't get our $80, because it just wasn't there by the time we paid the staff and the rest of it. And this particular day that my husband came home and tore down the front veranda had been a case where the bank we were dealing with refused. We had an overdraft there, and it was secured by, we had assigned our accounts receivable to them, and we had to let them know each month how much our accounts receivable were, you see. Well, because of the fact that accounts receivable were not considered very safe security in those days, they kept a very tight rein on what we were getting, you see, in this particular payday. They had refused to cash the wage check. And we had some money in our account. And I don't remember the details, but my husband managed to pay the staff, each of them, $10 each, which was roughly about half the pay. Some a bit more and some a bit less, but anyway, he got all of them a straight $10 each and told them he would pay them as soon as we collected a bill, which was a good sized bill that was owing to us. We had been promised a check when delivery of draperies was made, and people just didn't come through with the money and said they'd let us have a check the next week. So, you know, it was hand to mouth like that continuously. And we'd buy bolts of material occasionally from travellers who came through. We would occasionally put an order through for maybe a couple of three bolts of material. And these people generally do drafts on us, 30-day drafts or site drafts or what have you. Well, there were two or three occasions when we were in a terribly tight spot to meet them, you know. Sometimes would pay something on account and all this kind of thing.
This, right from the start, when we first opened in 1930, When was the lowest ebb? That you were saying this was going on continuously.
The lowest.
For how long is this? Is this?
Well, it went on for quite a long time. I might tell you, it was really, we really just about got on our feet and began to see daylight. Finished up work in the house here that had been hanging fire like for 2 or 3 years after we pulled out the work out and opened in town. This room was...
You were saying about the house here a couple of years.
Yes, well, this room was just let. The children used it as a playroom. It had linoleum on the floor and these lights still strung all over the place, you know, and connections for the irons and the machines. It was all exposed, nothing was hidden, you know, because all this had to be put in extra for turning it into a workshop, you see. But I think it was, I'm pretty certain it was 1934 when a man came into the studio one afternoon and he said, "Is Mr. White in?" I said, "No, he isn't. Can I do anything for you?" He said, "Well, I've got some good news for him. He's won 300 and I can't remember the amount. It was pretty close to $400 anyway, in a sweepstake. And you know, if anybody offered him a ticket and he had 2 bits in his pocket, he would buy it, you know, regardless of how badly he needed that 2 bits for something else. And it would be never any more than that, but you know, this was one thing he used to indulge in. And it was the BC Electric Railway Company. They have, I don't know who organized it, but this chap used to come in regularly and sell him tickets once a month, if he could catch him. And my husband had been the lucky one. Well, it was really quite marvelous, you know. We were just so happy. We didn't know how to talk to one another, hardly coming home, for laughing. The whole idea of having that much money to spend, you know, was just out of this world. And he said, "What do we do with the money?" "Oh," I said, "we're going to fix the front of the house. That's what we're going to do with it." Well, you see, it's a thing. When they tore the veranda down, you see, it left the hole in the front room. It was our office and living room and everything else in those days. And it had had a piece of linoleum tacked over it to cover the hole until we could do something about it. It just was dreadful looking, you know. Anyway, we decided that we'd extend the front bedroom over to form the cover for the bay, you see. So that's how that front part of the house was put on. That was the first thing. And this will take you back to some of the situations around here. It was a man who lived in a small cottage up the street with his wife. He had been doing prospecting at one time, but he was one of these people who, like so many people in those days, a lot of them didn't have what I call steady jobs and a routine life in any way, you know. They drifted and so forth before they were married anyway, lots of them. Anyway, he had done prospecting up north, and he'd also done carpentry work. And my husband made a deal with him that he would do this work, but just to in such a way that if he didn't have anything else to do, he would come and work on the house. We would provide enough money to pay for all the materials and $10 a week in cash for certain, and for the rest part, he would simply, we'd owe it to him, you see. And we'd give him $10 a week continuously, when he'd finished the job, until it was all paid off, on the understanding that he was free to go elsewhere where anybody wanted a job done, you see. And that worked out well for us, and it worked out quite well for him, because over a period of years he was getting this $10 a week regularly, you know, whether he was doing anything or not for us. And we bought the materials. And So that, I'm sure that was 34.